Hi, I'm David Schwimmer, and you're listening to Ross Owen's interviews on Black Sky Radio.
This is Ross Owen.
Virus database has been updated.
This is Ross Owen. They really know their shite.
Why, this is bigger than the Whispering Steeple in Kansas City.
This is Ross Owen.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
7 years of college down the drain.
This is Ross Owen.
Great Scott! What the devil are they doing?
The Ross Owen Show is sponsored by DDayHistorian.com.
Black Sky Radio.
Hey, 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 how's it going? This is Ross Owen with you right here on Black Sky Radio. It's Friday. It's the 3rd of February. How's your day been? Let me know. Send me a tweet at The Ross Owen Show on Twitter. Or if you're on Facebook, look up The Ross Owen Show and leave a comment there. Now, coming up on the show today, I have a very special guest. Quite ironic because that's his name, Christopher Guest. Yes. From Spinal Tap, for your consideration, mascots, waiting for Guffman. So many different things he's done. And he's going to be talking about his passion and his admiration for Laurel and Hardy on today's show. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up very shortly. Christopher Guest on the show, right here on Black Sky Radio.
How much you mean to me. There must be some other way to make you see. If it takes my heart and soul, you know I'd pay the price. Everything that I possess, I'd gladly sacrifice. Oh, you to me are everything, the sweetest song that I could sing. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. To you, I guess I'm just a clown who picks you up. Change of heart. If it takes forever, girl, then I'm prepared to wait. The day you give your love to me won't be a day too late.
Power, girl, to keep me holding on. So now you've got the baby leaves you all alone, and nobody calls you on the phone. Or don't you feel like a cry? Don't you feel like a cry? Well, here I am, honey. Come on, you cry to me. When you're all alone in your lonely room, and there's nothing but the smell of her perfume, don't you feel like a cry? Don't you feel like crying? Don't you feel like a cry? Come on, come on, cry to me. Oh, nothing can be said than a glass of wine alone. Waste of time. Oh yes, you don't ever have to walk alone. But you see, but come on, take my hand, baby, won't you walk with me? Oh yeah, when you're waiting for a voice to come. There's no one. Don't you feel like a cry?
Cry to me.
Don't you feel like crying?
Cry to me.
Don't you feel like a crack, a crack, a crack, a crack,
cry to me.
Hi, my name is Michael Fassbender, and you're listening to Ross Owens Interviews on Black Sky Radio.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. Been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul and faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game. Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was a time for change. Killed the Tsar and his ministers. Anastasia screamed in vain. Rode a tank, held a generous rank. When the blitzkrieg raged and the bodies stank. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Oh yeah. I was puzzling you with the nature of my game. Oh yeah. I watched with glee while you kings and for the God they made. I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys? When after all, it was you and me. Let me please introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. just call me Lucifer, cause I'm in need of some restraint. So if you meet me, have some courtesy, have some sympathy, and some taste. Give all your well-learned politics, or I'll lay your soul to waste. Yeah.
Stands a lonesome pine. Just below is the cabin home of a little girl of mine.
Her name is June, and very, very soon she'll belong to me. For I know she's waiting there for me neath that lone pine tree. In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine, in the pale moonshine, our hearts entwine, where she carved her name, and I carved mine, June, just like the mountains are blue, like the pine, I am lonesome for you.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine, in the pale moonshine, our hearts entwine, where she carved her name and I carved mine. Oh, June, like the mountains, I'm blue, like the pine, I am lonesome for you.
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine.
Trail of the Lonesome Pine, a classic song from the classic movie Way Out West, performed there by Laurel and Hardy and the Avalon Boys. Now, Laurel and Hardy have not only made us laugh over the years, but they've influenced many of today's artists, none more so than our friend Ricky Gervais. And when we spoke to Ricky about Laurel and Hardy recently, he said, "You must talk to Christopher Guest." So today, that's exactly what we're doing. Joining me on the phone right now is Christopher Guest, star of Spinal Tap, for your consideration, and more recently, the hilarious Mascots. Chris, thank you so much for being part of this show.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a delight to have you on. Now, we just played Trail of the Lonesome Pine from Way Out West, which, I don't know if you know this, but it reached number 2 in the UK singles charts back in 1975. Do you know which song kept it off the number 1 spot?
No.
It was Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. How about that for a fact?
That's good.
Now, Trail of the Lonesome Pine wasn't the only song in Laurel and Hardy films. We know that Oliver Hardy sang Lazy Moon in Pardon Us, Shine on Harvest Moon in The Flying Juices, and of course there were other songs as well in their movies. Do you have a favourite one?
I like Honolulu Baby.
Of course, yeah, from Sons of the Desert.
Yes.
Yes, that's a great song, isn't it? And there's, of course, one of my favourite Laurel and Hardy movies, that one, Sons of the Desert. Now, of course, the song sounds so much better with the volume turned up to 11, didn't they?
Yeah.
Now, where did your love for Laurel and Hardy begin, Chris? When did you sort of first become aware of them?
I think when I was quite small, my dad took me to see a collection of films in a cinema in New York, and my dad was English, and he had seen these originally as they came out, and there was a compilation done when I was a kid, and it was put in cinemas for a brief period of time, and he took me to see that, and that had a big effect, I think, seeing the early comedians. They were, Laurel and Hardy were part of it. I think there was some Buster Keaton in it, and I think others as well.
Sure. And how big a fan are you? I mean, as well as watching the movies, do you watch all the documentaries and read the books as well?
I've seen the bookend to this, I guess, is when my son was 5 years old, I realized that he was that I wanted to have some way of at least trying to show him, maybe to steer him a little bit into what I thought was funny. It can always backfire, obviously. And I showed him, I had a collection of Laurel and Hardy on DVDs, and I began to show him from the earliest ones. And I remember him, a five-year-old, watching these and falling off the couch laughing. And it's such a vivid memory, because the first time Ollie looks into the camera, he got that right away. And it's an amazing moment in comedy. I'm sure other people have talked about it, but it's a pivotal thing in the comedies that they did, obviously.
Sure. Now, being a long-time fan of Laurel and Hardy, do you find yourself ever, I do this all the time, do you find yourself ever correcting people when they get things wrong? Like when they misquote Ollie, for instance. So many people say, here's another fine mess you've gotten me into, and that really annoys me. Do you ever find yourself correcting people when they get it wrong?
Well, I don't, it doesn't come up very often, because, to be honest, aside from Ricky Gervais, Michael McKean, a few other people I know, I would say most people don't even know much about them at all.
Yes, that's very disappointing, isn't it? It's because we don't see them on TV anymore, and we are really campaigning, and we think it's really important that the next generation discover Laurel and Hardy, and like you did with your own son, really it's the DVDs now. We show the DVDs to the kids, and what is it about Laurel and Hardy, do you think, that makes them stand above other comedy teams of that era?
Well, I think the other thing I was going to say, which I've forgotten, was that when my son was possibly 8 or so, I took him to the Music Box Steps.
Well, that was my next question, actually.
We made a pilgrimage there, and there's a plaque there now. It's in a bit of a dodgy neighborhood, I guess, a little bit, but But we walked up the steps, and he got very excited. He started to run up, and there at the top, there's another street. And he said, there's the house. Let's go in the house. And he thought that that house was the house from the movie, you know, the actual interior and everything. And I said, well, that's a different thing. They used, you know, that was a different place. But it, that was a great trip. I think for me, there's something, it's the opposite of cynical comedy. And it's also rare because two of them, it's very rare in a comedy team where normally you have a straight man and then you have the so-called funny person.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, although Ollie probably thinks he's smarter, he really isn't. And I think it's fascinating to see two people inhabiting the same world. And there's something very lovable, obviously, about both of them. There's nothing cruel about this. And they're so appealing. And I guess as a kid, at least I did, I reacted to that. And when you see some of the other teams, the later team of Abbott and Costello, there's something, well, first of all, Abbott is not funny at all. There's nothing remotely funny or likable about him. And I think that also extends to some other teams where it seems that there's some lack of artistry, obviously, in some of them. I was also drawn to Buster Keaton, and there was something very mournful about his expressions, obviously, and
sure,
being deadpan. And there was something fascinating to me about the combination of his physical comedy and his expression. But for Laurel and Hardy, it's right out there for you to see. There's nothing hidden. This is not, it's not intellectual in any way. It's knowing, having read about them and how this was quite an accident that the two of them ended up together is even more amazing, I suppose.
Yes, that's true. And I always like to think of Laurel and Hardy as the original Dumb and Dumber, as you said. And I think that's why kids relate to them, because kids feel, you know, they feel more intelligent than them. And of course, they're much more than slapstick as well. I've always felt that, you know, one of the reasons that they survived the transition from silent movies to talkies was because they were more than slapstick. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Well, I think that's true. If you think of how many people never made it over that hurdle, and their voices are completely distinctive. The idea that Ollie was a Southerner and obviously Stan came from England, and that's unique. The people they had in their movies that populated the second banana roles were the best of the time. And that's another key for me. As a film director, I try to get as many good actors as you can get. You don't want to get talented stars and then fill out the rest of the movie with people that just sort of fill in, you know. And in their films, you have James Finlayson and you have Billy Gilbert and you have a bunch of people that are at the top level, and they're very willing to give over time and scenes to these people because they're so good.
And who would be your favorite co-star of theirs?
Well, I love Billy Gilbert because of his explosive sort of anger. And you see that in the music box, obviously. But there's something larger than life about him. And it's hard to not to like just visually Jimmy Finlayson. I'm not sure where in Scotland he's from. Do you know?
Yeah, he's from about 10-15 minutes away from where I am. He's from a place called Larbert, which is and it's I'm in a place called Cumbernauld, which is only 15 minutes away. So yeah, it's been quite close by, and I've seen a photograph of the house he used to live in, actually. And I think,
well, maybe you have to put up a statue.
That's just exactly. I think you're telescopic. Yeah, that's twice you've just predicted what I was about to say. We're going to try and get a statue, put up.
Right.
We're campaigning for that at the moment, and there is a plaque in the local town hall, and deservedly so. Now, Our mutual friend Ricky Gervais told us how that, you know, Laurel and Hardy and yourself are his biggest influences. Now, you just mentioned about how they sort of inspired you, over which characters you use in your movies. Are there any specific lessons or techniques that you learned from them?
So I think in what Ollie does, when he looks at the camera, is a very interesting device, because it comes from someone who's worked on the stage, someone who has looked out at the audience in the middle of a scene and can look at the audience and as if to say, you know, are you hearing the same thing I'm hearing, or can you believe this, or whatever. But to do it in a film is now you're jumping into a different technology, obviously, and it's still effective. And it, every time he does that, now I've never done that in a movie. Ricky does it all the time. And it's funny. And Ricky and I have talked about this idea that he feels no shame in basically, you know, doing that. And it's his way of, commemorating them, I'm sure. But it's not something, I can't point to one thing other than their overall sweetness and how that is appealing to me, and was appealing to me as a kid. And I'm sure we could use a lot more of that now, you know.
Now, we have a question from a Laurel and Hardy fan in England, John May, and his question is, could you ask Mr. Guest his opinion on why he thinks Laurel and Hardy have endured despite all the changes in comedy styles and genres over the decades? Does he think modern comedy could learn a few lessons from Laurel and Hardy?
Well, I think I wish they had endured even more. Obviously, they're ever present, but they're, to me, as you said earlier, I think I showed them to my son. Now, I have to say, he's 20 years old now, and he knows them by heart, but that is not what he comes back to. He's kind of moved into another thing. But I think that modern comedy, I'm not sure I would say it's in the healthiest of places. Let me put it that way.
Mm. Sure. Now, Stan Laurel's number was in the phone book. And over the years, he would invite fans to his home. And one such fan was Dick Van Dyke, who became friends with Stan after accidentally coming across his number in the telephone directory. And even after Oliver Hardy's death in 1957, Stan would continue to write Laurel and Hardy scripts. Ricky told us how Stan would show Dick Van Dyke the scripts he had written that week. When Dick Van Dyke would visit Stan, Stan would show him these scripts. Now, you've got quite a lot in common with Stan. Stan was a director, actor, gag man. You're a director, actor, musician, writer. If you were given the opportunity to meet Stan back in the day, what do you think you would have talked about? What would you have asked him?
Well, an old friend of mine who lives in New York wrote a letter to Stan when my friend was about 12 or 13. And Stan, at that point, was living in Santa Monica, California, right by the seaside. He had moved from Beverly Hills, and he was living in a fairly small apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And he received a letter back from Stan, which I've seen, hand-typed and hand-signed. And he answered, apparently, all of his fan letters. And it says, I'm so glad you like the L&H films, and if you're ever out here, you know, come and see me. And I guess I wish, you know, it never would have occurred to me as a child to write a letter, knowing that you could even write a letter to someone that was famous. But I think I would just want to hear him talk. I don't know if I can't imagine how that it would be amazing to know about the early days when he was in the company of actors he was in England before they came over on the boat. And I guess I would have, if he was able, I would have wanted to do a full documentary about his life, you know.
Sure. Now, do you know that there is, in fact, an hour-long interview with Stan Laurel in existence? I have a copy if you want me to send you it.
I would love to see, you know, any material on them is always appreciated.
It's audio only, but he does talk about his career before Laurel and Hardy in great depth, and it's absolutely just incredible. It's an hour long, and it was recorded just a week after Ollie died. It's really, really amazing. I'll definitely send that to you, and you can
That would be fantastic. It's to read about the Carno and the group of actors that came over. Obviously, Chaplin was intertwined in this, mm-hmm. and to hear about him as a young actor in England, I guess his dad was a theater owner or
that's correct.
And that's amazing enough as it is, but then to make this jump to come over to the States, and that obviously was the potential of being really the big time because of the amount of films that were being made.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I don't think could ever happen again in the way that it did, all the little jumps. There was a period of time where he was doing movies by himself. You know all this, obviously. And there was a moment where, I don't know if this is true, but they said that his career could have been over. They said that his eyes were so pale blue that they didn't show up well.
That's correct.
On film, and that they had to use a lot of sort of liner around it. And then this accidental meeting to form this partnership just by random. I mean, obviously in the first movie they weren't even together as a team, but it's all so incredible. And to think now the difficulties that people went through then versus how quick everything seems now and how quick everything can end. And these people had careers before they even started here. And so it's all interesting, and any material I'm always grateful to see.
Stan Laurel actually made his first stage performance here in Scotland, the Panopticon Theatre in Glasgow, and it's the Sons of the Desert Society, the Appreciation Society. They meet there once a month and show the movies. And if you're ever in Scotland, I said this to Michael McKean actually when he was over, and I did in fact meet up with Michael in Edinburgh. And his lovely wife Annette. Unfortunately, we didn't make it to Glasgow, but we spent some time together in Edinburgh. But any time you're in Scotland, let me know, because I will certainly take you for a private visit of the Panopticon if you would like to see it. It's still very active, and it's such a historical place.
Well, I would. That would be. Thank you for that offer. That would be fantastic. Yes.
Absolutely. Just let me know if you're ever in town. Now, I don't know if you've heard about this, but next month, shooting is scheduled to begin on a Laurel and Hardy biopic, and in fact I'm quite excited because I'm a consultant on it. It's a Fable Pictures and Sinesta Films production developed with BBC Films. Steve Coogan is to play Stan Laurel, and John C. Reilly will play Oliver Hardy. The story will be set in 1953 during their final UK tour. What are your thoughts on this? Are you a fan of biographical movies? Because a lot of people tend to be quite skeptical of these things.
Well, I think it obviously depends who is doing them, who's making them, who's in them, and it can be great and it can be dreadful. You know, it really depends on how it's done. It's all depends on how it's done. So I prefer not to make a generalization, but just to hope that some person that you have revered, or the two of them in this case, that there's respect and that it's done well.
Absolutely, and there's a great team behind it. Jeff Pope wrote the screenplay, and Jeff's such a reputable guy. He wrote Philomena, and John S. Baird, he directed Filth, with James McAvoy is directing it. So they're all Laurel and Hardy fans as well. So yeah, I agree with you. Let's give it a chance. It's due for release next year, so watch out for that. Stan and Ollie. Now, what are some of your favourite Laurel and Hardy moments, Chris?
I remember watching the film where Ollie is calling up the stairs to have Stanley come downstairs, and you hear this noise, and then Stan walks in the front door, and he looks at him and says, well, I fell out the window. And it's this moment of, it's so perfect because you can visual, you don't see it, you just visual, you hear the sound, and he comes in, he's looking up the stairs, and he comes in behind him in the front door. There's so many. There's in Chump at Oxford, there's the sequences when he hits his head and those transitions that Stan makes. And obviously when you've seen him play his normal character, that's a huge difference. And I think County Hospital is one of my favorites, just because you get this sense that it's the perfect vacation for Ollie, in a way, even though he has his leg, you know, in a cast, that he has this relief in a way from Stan. And of course, the first thing that happens is he comes to visit, and now it starts. And now, so right away, when he sits next to the bed and he has his bag of nuts, and he offers him, you know, nuts, and it's almost the perfect formula for them, because you never get to see them in what would have been this little time where Ollie could have just been quiet and just done whatever he wanted to do. Now, of course, his friend comes to visit him and turns into what you would expect. That's one of my favorites. I do like the music you were talking about from Way Out West. There's an amazing dance scene in that.
Yes.
And it's always amazing because you see them dancing in the music box as well when they're doing that funny little dance in the house. You see how nimble Oliver is, and every time you see him do that, it's surprising to see a large guy move that well. It's kind of expected of thin people.
That's right. Yes, it's incredible. And he also does it, of course, in Flying Juices when he sings Shine On Harvest Moon. Of course, he does the dance as well on that.
Yes.
Yeah, he was very nimble for his size. And if you know, it's quite funny when you look back at films like Tit for Tat, Ollie wasn't really fat at all in that.
No.
And yet, you know, it was more later in life he started really putting on the weight. What did you think of the later movies, the sort of after Hal Roach, the sort of Fox era?
Well, obviously, it happened to a lot of comedians when they made these transitions. It happened to the Marx Brothers when they went over to another studio. It happened to many different groups where it starts, something is different.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get to do, there was such freedom in the early days where I've worked at the Culver Studios. I've made several films there, and it's one of the oldest studios in Hollywood. And there's a plaque a few blocks from there to Roach and to those people, because they made their movies just in the streets. They would just go out in the streets and say, this, wouldn't it be funny if we just did this? There's no one is going to an office to get a permit to see if we could photograph something. Nobody cared. It was just people going out on the street. And Frank Capra was a gag writer and various other people. And they would just say, you know, it would be funny. It would be funny if, what if this happened? Let's just do this. Now we're just doing this. And as their careers, it's always at a point in their careers where something has changed. Now people are trying to control them, and it's just not as good. It happens to many, many people, and they don't trust what made them good in the first place. And then someone suddenly thinks, I know better, and I'll restrain them in a sense.
Right.
If you look at the very last movie they did, which is heartbreaking to see.
Yeah. Stan could never bear to watch it, ever.
You know, I've watched 10 minutes, and it's just, it's awful, you know, to see that happen. But I think something artificial, they're not allowed organically to do what they do.
Mm.
There's a lack of that freedom, and it's never going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rare for comedians in those situations. The more they do, the more they sort of think, well, I have to do this because people expect something, and then someone says, you have to do this, that it's not going to be as joyful, you know.
That's right. And I think, did you ever see This Is Your Life with Laurel and Hardy?
I did, sure.
1954. Yeah. Again, Stan just wasn't himself because he had no control over, you know, what was happening in that. And it was live television as well.
It's the worst. I mean, I think it's for the worst premises anyway, because it's embarrassing to people and it's uncomfortable for comedians. And obviously Stan, who was key person in terms of coming up with some of the gags and setting them up, it's just the opposite of what you want to happen. It couldn't be more uncomfortable, I guess.
And one of the things that amazes me about Laurel and Hardy, they never ever saw themselves as stars. They were very humble, down-to-earth guys. Stan didn't feel he was deserved of being in the same league as a movie star, which, I mean, if only they knew how loved they actually were.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes across when you see them, and I think the opposite comes across when you see actors who choose to think that they're special and elevated and they're very wealthy and they're better, and so something goes off, something is wrong, and I think it's easy to see that in a film. The other thing becomes more important. It's not just for comedians, but for actors who think they are bigger than all the rest of it, you know. And here are these two guys who came from, you don't see much of this anymore. You just don't see lives like that. And it's just not the way the world is now. But they're unique. And I guess it's good news that there is the amount of stuff that there is on DVD that one can see. Because imagine, given how much has been lost in films, I mean, literally just lost, it's good at least that we have what we have.
That's true. And I must tell you, you mentioned the Stan Laurel letters earlier. There is a website called lettersfromstan.com, and it is the Stan Laurel archive of letters that he wrote to people. And it's really, it's like reading his biography in his own words. It's just incredible. I'll send you a link to that as well, so that you can have a look at that. And so what's in the pipeline next for you, Chris? I saw Mascots and thought it was absolutely hilarious, fantastic stuff, really, really funny.
What
projects do you have coming up next?
Well, what I typically do, or don't do, I should say, is I don't go from project to project. So I like to take some time off in between, which is somewhat unusual, I think, in the business I'm in. But I often take 2 or 3 years to just not do that. And I play some music and think a little bit or not think. And something may come into my mind or it may not. But I've always given myself a lot of space. I think it's more familiar to see people going from thing to thing to thing, and we only finished that in October, so I'm now hoping to take a bit of time and think about what I want to do. That's the way I have always done it, and it feels natural and good for me to do.
Well, Chris, I want to take this opportunity to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. Thank you for your help in keeping the memory of Laurel and Hardy alive. Now, I'm going to play you out with a song of your choice. Which song would you like me to play?
I would say Honolulu Baby.
Honolulu Baby. We'll certainly play that for you right now.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to speak with you, and keep doing what you're doing.
Christopher Guest, thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of the day. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Black Sky Radio.
Honolulu baby, where'd you get those eyes? Any dark complexion and her island lies. Honolulu baby, where'd you get those eyes? Any dark complexion and her island lies.
Underneath the beauty of the stars, I strayed upon the maidens who were drumming on their guitars. A hula maid was dancing, and I knew it was my paradise. So this is what I told her as I gazed into and you start to dance. You hula hips and rats, then you shake it up and down. You shake a little here,